Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Dallas, Texas, and had to be bribed with nickels and dimes by his father to play catch. He became the first black player on the Chicago Cubs and was the MVP of the National League in 1958 and 59. He was the first black Ford auto dealer in the world. He is Mr. Cub Ernie Banks with his trademark cry of,
"Let's play two!"
We're honored to have him as our guest. I'm Jack Frasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Frasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with Mr. Cub Ernie Banks. Ernie, it's an honor to have you.
Thank you very much. Nice to be on the show.
And welcome to Detroit.
Thank you. It's a wonderful city.
You grew up in Dallas, Texas. The heat that we're having right now was nothing for you in Dallas, Texas. You came from a family of 12, and you were the oldest son. Can you talk about your childhood?
Oh, well, I mean, my childhood was pretty quiet. I was a pretty shy kid growing up. When I was 13 years old, I used to sit in the back of the class and look at people, and I used to say to myself, I mean, gosh, human beings are the only ones that can make life complicated and unpleasant. That's what I thought about when I was 13. So as I grew and got older and my mother began to talk to me about different things, my dad, you know, he talked to me about different things, you know, getting out with people and being around them and learning from them and doing things with them. And more I began to get used to being around people. Then I went to high school. I went over to watch them practice football, and a friend of mine named Bill Blair, he was an older man, he came up and said, "Hey, you should be out there playing." So I went in, put on a uniform, went out and joined the football team. I was not into sports. It was not one of my major factors in my life. I wanted to be a corporate spy later on in my life. So I went out and started playing football, and 1 year, and my first game I played in 1948, I got hurt. My mom and dad came out to see me play. I got hurt and was out for a while, broke my collarbone and all of that, and they were real quiet about it. My mom was nurturing me. My dad was telling me, you know, you can be all right and all of that. They were very nurturing family, and I was the second child and first boy, and so they kind of spoiled me a little bit with taking care of me.
Your dad had to bribe you with nickels and dimes to play catch. What did he do for a career?
Well, he played baseball. He played baseball with a Sandlot team in Dallas, the Dallas Green Monarchs, and he was a pitcher and a catcher. So one day he took me up to be a bat boy for that team, and I was a bat boy and came back, and so he started playing catch with me. You know, wanted to play catch every day after he got off from work. But what he did, he was like a porter. He could fix anything, do anything, clean cars, load trucks, fix tables, all-around handyman. That's what he did for a living. So he would come home every evening and get a glove and a ball and get out and say, "Come on, let's play some catch. I'll give you a nickel to play some catch with me." And I didn't know why, because in Dallas, we didn't have a major league team, but a minor league team, so there was no real interest that I had in playing baseball. He did, but I did not. So I got out and played catch with him, and then he got me a stick and started hitting the balls and, you know, just kind of slowly getting me interested in the game of baseball. And then I started playing a little bit more, and then 1 year, a guy came up, Johnny Carter, came up to the school and saw me on the campus up there playing softball, and he asked me, "Do you play baseball?" I said, "No, I had never played baseball." So he took me to Amarillo, Texas, and I went out there and played with an older team, traveled around, all around Texas, Oklahoma, New Mexico, playing in this on a semi-pro team. And my first game in Amarillo, I hit a home run. And all the players were saying, hey, go up in the stands. I didn't know what they meant by that. But when you hit a home run back then, you go in the stand, take off your cap, and people will pay you. They put quarters, nickels, dimes, dollars in your hat because of you hitting the home run. I didn't understand all that. But it was unique for me. But I started playing baseball when I was 17, and I played against the Kansas City Monarchs minor league team in Lubbock, Texas. And Coop Papa Bell saw me play, and I had a good game, and he recommended me to the Kansas City Monarchs.
What did they pay you?
What did?
The Monarchs pay you.
The Monarchs paid me. My first year was $400. But I never really thought about money. My life has always been doing things for the love of it, and I still feel that way. And sometimes my wife and friends and many people I played against when I came to the Cubs, how much do you make? I didn't think about any of that. I just talk about playing, just going out and enjoying it. And with the Monarchs, I made $400. Buck O'Neill came to Dallas and signed me up, talked to my mom and dad, and said we want him to go to Kansas City and play with the Monarchs. He can play, and we'll take care of him and all of that. And he gave me a contract for $400, and I went to Kansas City.
Cool Papa Bell was rumored to be the fastest man in the history of baseball. They said that, I think Satchel Paige once said that he's the only man could come into his room, turn the light off, and be in bed before the light was off.
I've heard that story. Coop Papa Bell, I played against him in Lubbock, Texas. He was managing the other Kansas City Monarchs team. And then when I came to the majors, show how life is, when I came to the major league and went to St. Louis where he lived, he came over to see me at the hotel. He sat down. He was like a mentor. And he would talk to me, how's everything going? How you swinging? Are you saving any money? And all the things. He became a real close friend and a mentor to me. And I thought a lot of him. But he recommended me coming to the Kansas City Monarchs. I went to Kansas City Monarchs. And then I was playing there for a year or so. Went into military for 2 years. Came out. Came back to the Monarchs. And then we played a game in Chicago. And Buck O'Neill, the manager of the Kansas City Monarchs, called me up and said, hey, meet me in the lobby at 7 o'clock in the morning. And I didn't know what it was for. I didn't even question what he was saying. And went down, and he took me out to Wrigley Field, and I signed with the Cubs, and that was the beginning of my career.
When we come back, we'll talk about your career with the Cubs. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with Ernie Banks, Mr. Cub. It's 1953, and you come up with the Cubs. You're the first black player for the Chicago Cubs. What was that like?
Well, it was a little bit different. When I was with the Monarchs, my last game was in Pittsburgh, and most of the players on the Kansas City Monarchs. So when you go into the major leagues, you're going to be with Ralph Connor playing in Wrigley Field, Chicago, and all that. And I said to myself, what's the big deal about it? The major leagues. So when I arrived at the Wrigley Field, walked into the park and looked at it, I said, wow. I wasn't that impressed. I'm a very unusual person in that sense. I mean, I look at life that this is where it's supposed to be. This is where I should be. This is what I should be doing. And I'm going to do it. And that's where my life has been, you know. I went out to the infield, started taking ground balls, went up to the batting cage, started hitting the ball, and the manager, Phil Cavaretta, was standing there, and he came up to me and said, you're playing tomorrow. So I just looked at that, you know, and didn't say anything, just fine. I'm going to play. So I started the game, made an error, and we lost 16-5 or something like that. I hit 3 fly balls, and I mean, I was not overly whelmed by it, by anything that ever happened in my life. It was just, this is where it's supposed to be. This is where I'm supposed to be. This is what I'm supposed to be doing.
You once said that you were very fortunate as a professional athlete to spend your entire career in one city, Chicago, with one mayor, Richard Daley, with one owner, Mr. Wrigley, in one beautiful ballpark, Wrigley Field, and under one light, God's light, sunshine. You never played a night game in Wrigley Field.
That's right. And when I was, funny that you mentioned that, when I was quite young, I used to see my dad work from sun up to sun down. I mean, it was dark when he left home, dark when he came home. And I used to say to myself at night, I mean, gosh, I'd like to have a job where I do all my stuff in the daytime, work in the daytime. And funny enough, 5 years later, I was at Wrigley Field playing there with no lights. I played all my career under God's lights, and which meant that, you know, it was kind of playing in my life. And my kids came to the game. My family was around a lot, saw a lot of the games. I grew up with them, took them to a lot of the road trips and all of that by playing all day game. But it was just wonderful to play in a city. I mean, a wonderful city, a wonderful team. Everything kind of fell in place with my life. And I've been with the organization 51 years, and it's just been wonderful. And what I learned from that is loyalty is kind of the major thing in my life. I mean, I know a lot of people don't believe in it, but you got to be loyal to whatever you're doing, or whoever you're with, or wherever you live in, or whoever you meet. And that has been my whole life. It's just loyalty.
Baseball started in 1869. Less than 1% of the players who have played Major League Baseball are in the Baseball Hall of Fame. It's the toughest Hall of Fame to get into. There's only 195 players in the Baseball Hall of Fame. Here are some stats. You played in 2,528 games. You came to bat 9,421 times. You hit 512 home runs. You struck out 1,236 times, and 27.4% of the time at bat, you got on base. So here's a Hall of Fame career where less than 30% of the time, you succeeded. Most people are afraid to try because they're afraid to fail. What do you say about that?
Well, you have to just overcome it. I mean, just ignore it. Say, I'm going to go out here and do it. That's it. And that was my whole life in baseball. And it just, I'm going out here today and do the best I can. And if I'm successful, fine. If I'm not, I'm going to come back tomorrow and do it again. My whole life is looking at things in the present, you know, not the past. It's not the present. It's not the future. It's now. My life is, whatever is happening, it's happening right now. And that's where I was when I played. That's where my philosophy in my life. That's what I do when I around kids that I see and meet that I don't know. Just tell them that, hey, just enjoy this moment, this day, not thinking about next week, next year, and all of that. Just enjoying today. And that was my life. Although you're not successful all the time, I didn't play in the World Series. And I look at that now and looked at it then, that the World Series, it's really not the World Series. You're not playing everybody in the world. I said this to myself, not playing with everybody in the world. Plus the fact that winning is deeper than winning a game. It's winning the respect of the fans, friends, family, and associates and relatives, and winning the love and respect from them. That's real winning. That's the kind of winning that would last. It's not a trophy. It's not a ring. It's not an award. It's winning the respect of your people that's close to your life that help you, help elevate your life.
Positive thinking has been very important in my life. I credit it with an awful lot of my success, along with my parents, etc. Long before I read any of Norman Vincent Peale, Zig Ziglar, Og Mandino, Robert Schuller, the first positive thinker I really came in contact with outside the family was Ernie Banks.
What?
Ernie Banks. Where did you get that positive thinking from?
Well, actually, in Chicago, I was around a lot of those people. Norman Vincent Peale, I'd go around and hear them speak. I would be in places where they were. And that's how I gained it. You know, that's how I learned. I read a lot of books about thinking positive. I just got into it, you know, because I was like you, to think about, hey, there's a brighter side, there's a better way, I can do this. things going to be fine, you know, just developing that positive thinking. And when somebody came up to me on the baseball team said, boy, I got a problem, I would say, that's good. Now we got to find out a way to solve that problem. I mean, that's, you know, that's what I learned, you know, throughout my life by being around Norman Vincent Peale and a lot of these people that taught positive thinking, was into positive thinking, and it kind of embedded into my life. And I did that all my career, just spreading positive thinking, the positive mental attitude to everybody I came around and talked to and see. And when I played, that's why I got the saying, let's play two. It was in July 1967, it was about 100 degrees at Wrigley Field, and I walked in the clubhouse and said, boy, it's a beautiful day, let's play two. And all the players looked at me and said, this guy's crazy. But it was some way of uplifting and spirited and energy and everything for my own life. And I tried to share that with other people that I came around.
You're in the Baseball Hall of Fame. If they ever create a Hall of Fame for optimism and enthusiasm, you'll be in the inaugural class.
They won't think I'm crazy, but they
No, they won't. We're talking to Ernie Banks. And when we come back, we'll talk more about enthusiasm and optimism. I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR with Jack Krasula.
Welcome back. We're with Mr. Cub, Ernie Banks. Ernie, it's last August, the Ryder Cup week here in town, and you stay with me. It was an honor to have you. And our arrangement was that I couldn't get a ticket to the Friday matches the first day, and I was to pick you up at the end of the day at the corner of Maple and Telegraph. So I get there, you pull up in a cart. You get in the car, it's a beautiful sunny afternoon, and the first thing I say is, Ernie, we were awful. We lost seven matches and only tied one. Do you remember what you said?
I said, the sun will come out tomorrow. Bet your bottom dollar that tomorrow there be sun.
That's your life. No matter what happens, you're always looking for the positive, the tomorrow. Why?
It's just the way I am. I can't explain how I am. I look at the day, especially in sports, and sometimes in business too. I mean, things don't work out that day or that night, and I always look, well, we'll come back tomorrow. And when I play for the Cubs, we got eliminated many, many, many times. I'll say, wait till next year. That's the only thing we can do. Wait till next year. We get in a losing streak. And I'll just tell people, we're just backing up for a running start. That's all we're doing. Just stay with us. But anyway, that's been most of my life and people I've been around. I've been around a lot of people much older than me, and I learn a lot from them. I have mentors, Buck O'Neill, Bill Blair, my dad, my mom, many people that have gone ahead of me and done things and have experience, and I've been around them, and I learned a lot from them to just stay positive and believe in things. Look at the bright side of things. Look at the good in people, not the bad.
A lot of people are down right now. Times are tough. They don't have enthusiasm. Ernie, how do they get it?
Well, I mean, you just you be around people who look at the bright side of life and have the good things around them. You're not the ones that are not looking at the bright side of life and looking at the positive, looking at the good thing. And most of the time, I'll say to a lot of my friends I meet, pick a better country. And they look at me, what are you talking about? Man, we should go out and kiss the ground every morning. I mean, this is people that I see that are depressed and don't have enthusiasm that I'm around. I would say, what a beautiful country we live in. I mean, this is the last great hope for mankind on earth. It's America. This is it. We should be like the Pope and get out and kiss the ground.
We're talking to Ernie Banks. I'm Jack Krasula. And this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
Welcome back. We're with Ernie Banks. Ernie played 19 seasons with the Chicago Cubs from 53 through 71. And only six of those 19 did we have a winning season. I often say we were the best team in the 1800s. We won more championships. Ernie, in the 1900s, that was just a tough century for us. But this is a new century. But we came very close in 69. And after all those years of not getting close, what was it like to come so close and not get there?
Well, naturally, I was disappointed. I mean, that was my last hurrah. I was 39, 40 years old, and my last chance to get into the playoffs and hopefully get into the World Series. And sometimes you think you have things in the bag, and the bag will break. And that year, we thought we had it in the bag, and the bag broke. But throughout the season, you know, as we went along, got close to the end, I mean, a lot of the players began to get a little bit more enthusiastic, a little bit more cocky about things. And, you know, my feeling at that time was, hey, let's hold on a little bit, hold on, hold on till we finish it. And then from that, I learned that whatever you start out in life, you got to finish the job. I haven't seen much of that. Finish the job, whatever it is. Finish it off. And that's what I thought about. It was very, very disappointing because my last hurrah, we didn't get a chance to get into the playoffs or World Series. And right now, many of the players was on that team. We still talk about it, still reminisce about it. And I see them and I said, well, that's gone. We got to think about now. I mean, what's going on now? But it was a very, very hard time for a lot of people in Chicago, a lot of people with the team. The owners, everybody was so disappointed that we didn't win that year.
I don't know if I'm still over that. Can we talk about some of the Hall of Famers that you played with, against, and what you learned from these people? Number one, Jackie Robinson.
I learned a lot from Jackie, just staying there. In fact, Jackie told me the first year I came to the Cubs, we played the Dodgers in 53, and Jackie told me very privately, listen and you'll learn. So for about 5 years, I didn't talk. They thought I was a deaf mute. I would just listen to everybody, every conversation. I was over there listening to them. And that's what I learned from Jackie, listening. And then 5 years after I was in baseball, I went to a listening seminar to learn how to listen to people, what they're saying and what they're really saying. And it was very good for my life and my concentration and my focus to listen to people and what they were saying. And Jackie gave me that, and it stayed with me even today.
Hank Aaron.
Hank Aaron. I've just been around Hank. I've learned many different things from him. Just determination. I mean, just determined. And his lifestyle was very quiet. He wasn't flashy, flamboyant, outspoken, and all of that. He just played the game. And his concentration was unbelievable. His dedication to the game, his focus on things was just always there. And being around him, going to dinner with him by his house, and seeing him playing against him in All-Star games and playing against him in the National League. I mean, he just was that way, just determined person, determination. And that was ingrained in my life, and I became a lot more determined about everything I did.
Willie Mays.
Willie Mays, I learned that his plan, the way he played, was to please the people. The fans, it was basket catch and his cap flying off and all that. Whenever there's a big crowd, Willie Mays was always there. Performance. That's what I learned from Willie. When you're on stage, you got to perform. And when I started doing public speaking, I began to think about Willie Mays. I mean, walk out on the stage and perform and stand tall and speak loud and take charge of things, because people want to see you. They want to hear you. And I learned that from Willie Mays.
Stan Musial,
I learned about joy. I mean, he was just, very happy player and a person that enjoyed people, enjoyed life. I remember one time in Chicago, I was asked to do something with a black organization on the West Side. And I called up Stan Muse. I said, "Stan, you'll be here. I'd like for you to go with me." He said, "Okay, I'll go with you, Ernie." So we went over on the West Side, the black organization. And this was the first time these black kids saw a white person, a black person together. And I still hear about it. Some of them are grown now. And they still, "Wow, you came over to the West Side and you brought Stan Musial over there. And wow, we had never seen a black person, a white person together at the same place." And Stan was just so joyous, so friendly and so nice, sign autographs, talk to people. His disposition was even and balanced all the way through. And I really enjoyed being around him. I still talk to him a lot today.
Al Kaline.
Al Kaline is another person that just so balanced, so friendly to everybody. I mean, just a giving person. I learned, you know, how to give and help and create from Al Kaline.
Sandy Koufax.
Sandy Koufax, I mean, business. I mean, had a tremendous business mind. He was a great pitcher, great athlete. But his business mind was just unbelievable. He just knew how to do business. He knew about business. A little shy on the other side, because when he got into television, he didn't want to do that. So many of these athletes overall, they're a little bit shy and a little quiet in their activities of life. But he was that way.
Yogi Berra.
Yogi Berra was a very funny man, just naturally funny. I mean, every time you see Yogi, he always had something humorous to say. I mean, "Hey, come to the fork in the road, take it." I mean, he was always funny. He was talented. And he was very concerned about people. You know, I'd come up one time when I had knee problems. "How's your knees? How's this doing? How's your family?" He always was concerned about the person, and I really admire that in Yogi.
He recently turned 80. And on his 80th birthday, he said, "The future ain't what it used to be."
And you only have to do it just one time, getting old.
Roy Campanella.
Roy Campanella was just a wonderful person. I was around him. I remember playing with the Kansas City Monarchs in an exhibition game, and he was driving his car, and he asked me to ride with him instead of going on the bus. "Come on, ride with me, Ernie." So I rode with him, and he always gave me a lot of advice about different things, and do this, do that, and don't do that. You're saving your money, you're doing this and that. Very concerned about the person that he was around, and that was me.
The owner of the Cubs, Mr. Wrigley.
Fantastic man. A pathfinder, very, very into everything. He understood life, but very shy and humble. Most of these people that I've seen in the Hall of Fame and met are very humble people. They don't brag about what they know, what they did. You just been around them and they do it. But I've learned a lot from Mr. Wrigley. He once told me about baseball, that many people came to him for advice about buying a baseball team, and he would tell them, you know what I mean, if you're in the business to make money, you can't make it in baseball. And he also told me one time that baseball was too big of a business to be a sport and too big of a sport to be a business. So if you're in it, you just have to enjoy it. If you own a team, just enjoy it and live with it and have fun with it. But he was very, very talented, smart man.
We're talking to Mr. Cub Ernie Banks, and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR with Jack Krasula.
We're talking to Ernie Banks, Mr. Cub, Mr. Optimism. Last Thanksgiving weekend, Ernie, Dick Ebersol, the president of NBC Sports, and his wife, Susan St. James, former actress. I think they have 5 children. They were in a private plane crash, and they lost a 12-year-old son, Teddy. And within a week, Tim Russert interviewed her, the mom, for 20 minutes. And one of the things she said was, having bitterness, having resentment, is like me taking poison in the hope that you die. You've had setback after setback. You experienced segregation. You experienced coming very close. There is no bitterness, no resentment in your body. Why?
It just the way I am. I and it cost me a lot too with people I know and around. I mean, they would look at me and say, I mean, you're not bitter about anything. You know what this guy did for you? I went to a golf course one time and the guy wouldn't let us play and all of that. You got to get off the golf course and all of that. And so I was with this other friend of mine. He said, man, you're not bitter about it? And, no, let's go back out there and see him again. Maybe he'll be different. And it just happened in my life now. That's what I'm wrestling with in my life right now, is that I don't see any bitterness with anybody. When they do something that are not favorable to me, I call them up and talk to them. Dallas Green would be the general manager of the Cubs, and he fired me. I was playing golf up in Lake Geneva and saw it on television. So this friend of mine said, man, isn't that really something? What's wrong with those people? So I went back to Chicago, had a meeting with him, sit down and talk to him, and then I went on. So he became general manager again, another team. So I said, I'm going to call up Dallas Green. You're going to do what? The man fired you. So, you know, I'm just not like that. I kind of look at people and see that they're not. They're human beings. They make mistakes. Sometimes they're not thinking when they make a decision. Sometimes they're bitter about something in their lives. Sometimes something happened to them, and they do things to other people, unkind things. And a lot of times they're sorry. I see that in baseball now. Rocker with Atlanta Braves. I see a lot of players. I mean, things happen to them. They do things. And I'm sure when they go home, they feel bad about it or say something about somebody or criticize somebody. It's just not in my nature. I mean, I've learned to forgive and forget. That's it. And I'm wrestling with that now. Everywhere I go, somebody, boy, you know what this guy did to you? You know what this guy did to do with this guy? Well, that's the way he felt at that time. So I've learned to do that, and I agree with you were saying about putting poison in yourself for somebody else to die, and that's kind of where I believe about it.
One day you're with icons in the business world. The next day you're golfing with Michael Jordan. The next day you're golfing with Bill Gates and Warren Buffett. And then you come in contact with a little 6-year-old kid, and you treat that kid just as if he's as important as the Jordan, et cetera.
That's what I do. And sometimes kids come up and ask me this, you know, privately. Ernie, what should I do with my life? And I would tell them, and they have to think about this, whatever you do, avoid success. And they have to think about that. Whatever you do, avoid success. I've seen successful people, not all. I mean, success is just eat them up. They just cannot deal with it. It's too much. It's too much for them. It, you know, the media, the adulation they get from other people, their families, everything. I mean, it's the balance of life. And I believe that friendship is the balance to life. I mean, really, it's not what you have, how much money you have, where you've been. It's friendship that really makes the difference in life. I learned this from Mr. Togo. He was chairman of the board of Toyota. He's gone now. I was playing golf with him. Many of these people I met on a golf course where it's most relaxed and everything, and we was playing golf, and I asked him about that. What's the difference in running a business in Japan and the United States and how we do business in the United States? And, well, we, you know, in the United States, we do business this way, this way, this way, but in Japan at that time, they worked a lot on friendship. That's the balance of life, is friendship. Because They're there when you're up, and they're there when you're down. And they're always around. Money comes, money goes. Fame comes and it goes. But friendship stays around, and that's what I'm working on now. Everywhere I go, even here at the All-Star Game or Detroit, I'm looking to meet someone to build a friendship with. That's all, just a friendship. Just to call and talk to and share things with, and I'm working with my wife on that too. It just, yeah, we're going to Detroit, we're going to this place, we're going to this place. Let's find one person that we can build a friendship with. And I did that the other day. I called up Ken Chenault, chairman of the board of American Express. And I said, I'd like to be in New York. I'd like to see you. Okay, let me check my schedule. He did, 5 o'clock. And I went by to visit with him and took him a jersey and a ball for his kids. I could do a little research on him. And we just had a nice relationship. And so when I left, I said, well, no matter what we do in life, let's continue to be friends. And, you know, that kind of stuff is what I believe in.
Last August, when we were together for the Ryder Cup here, one night we went to a restaurant in Birmingham. And a couple came up to us, and he recognized you. Everybody recognized you that week. And he told a story of how you were his hero. And then he left, and he came back an hour later with a program. And he said, Ernie, this was the first game I ever went to. It was 1971. And you said, what did I do? And he opened the program. He scored it with his dad, and he said, you pinch hit in the eighth inning. And you immediately said, that was against Don Gullett with the Reds on a 1-2 count. I got a single to left, and we won the game 3-2. Your recall of every at-bat, every pitch, and this is true of professional golfers, football players, how do you guys do that?
Well, it's training, inherited. I mean, that to me, that's a good question. That to me is what I looked at a lot in sports. I looked at successful people, and especially athletes that have been around. They have great memory. They really do. I took a memory course too later on to remember everything. Joe Morgan, Pete Rose, they used to be around these guys. I roomed with Lou Brock. Lou Brock used to write down things, you know, we played over here and I did this and that. He threw me this and all that. But prior to that, I mean, all these guys in the Hall of Fame, they have tremendous memories. They can remember almost everything that happened during the season, when they hit their 500 home run, when they hit their 3,000th hit, when they won the Cy Young. They can remember everything about it, how they feel. I used to remember how I felt on certain days. Pictures was taken of me that I see pictures that people bring up the sign, and I look at the picture and I can remember how I felt when that picture was taken and who I was with and what was happening in my life. I had a tremendous memory, and as you mature, it changes, you know. So I really fight that now to be able to remember things, names, places, and all the events.
Thanks for being Ernie. Thanks for coming tonight and sharing your one-in-a-million Hall of Fame story. Our guest next Sunday will be the former mayor of Detroit, Dennis Archer. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening. Anything is possible, and make it a great week. Spohn.